Hey, hockey fans. Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Searching for something to put a smile back on your face. Just remembering unusual times that can come from an unusual place. You need a partner for the ride, 'cause everybody needs a Clyde. So set your worries to the side. Pretend I got a hand I can lend, 'cause when you really need a friend, just ask. Shit 90 Shows taught me.
Shit 90 Shows taught me was not filmed before a live studio audience.
Are you ready to slay another day? So are we. Welcome back to Shit 90 Shows taught me. I'm Jess Sterling here with my co-host Sarah Humphrey. Sarah, how are you?
Jess, how do I know that you're not a Jess bot? What's the question that I need to ask to make sure that I know it's you?
This is a good question. Yeah. Is this a different question than the, like, how can you be sure that you're not like being
an evil twin,
held in hostage, or like that, you know, your phone hasn't been taken?
It's similar.
I guess. But usually, like, the signs of you being a robot are, like, you're obsessed with talking about whoever, like, programmed you.
Yeah. And, so, like, obscenely happy. I feel like it would be easier to clock if I was a robot.
Yeah, you would smile so much. It would be too much. Yeah.
Very joyous, very happy. But I don't know. You could be a robot. Who can say?
I guess it's possible.
Yeah. Did Bill program you? That's sicko.
If he did, he did a terrible job. Let me tell you, he really needs to work on the brain functioning. I think, because you shouldn't program a robot with this much anxiety. It's just not cool. You know, don't make robots have existential crises. It's not nice.
Yeah.
But you know who's not a robot, but is definitely a Spuffy fan? Mm. Our guest this week, Tom Palmer. Tom, how are you?
I'm good. Yeah, I'm kind of a Spuffy fan. This episode may be challenging.
You picked one that's, like, tough to defend in terms of Spike's actions, no?
But it does have a big Spuffy moment at the end.
I mean, there's the first actual kiss between Buffy and Spike. It happened.
Sarah, are you challenging that? You're giving looks like you're challenging that claim.
It did happen.
I mean, it was not a kiss of passion. It was a pity kiss.
It was like a thanks for not giving up my sister kiss.
Yeah. I would say, I mean, if once we see the, once we see some sort of passion like Buffy Bot and Spike had with the kiss, then I would call it a real kiss. It was, once again, a pity kiss, which is very sad for Spike because I feel like most of the kisses in his life have probably been pity kisses because he's pathetic as fuck. But yeah. Also, I did rewatch the last episode, and I will say because we shit on that Angel scene so bad, just so bad. I will say the kissing chemistry did improve, mm-hmm. which I would probably give those props to Sarah Michelle Gellar. I wonder
if it's because she's like, I'm not playing Buffy. I am playing Buffy Bot.
No. I'm talking about Angel and Buffy in the last
apologies.
Episode.
Yes.
When they're in the cemetery. Because I rewatched it because my husband needed to catch up. So,
okay. Yeah,
so I rewatched that scene. And mm-hmm. without the disgust that I was feeling towards the scene previously, yeah. I noticed an improvement in the kiss chemistry is what I'm saying.
Okay. Yeah. Listen, we're 5 seasons into Buffy, you know, Sarah Michelle Gellar is like, I can kiss on screen now. Like I know what I'm doing.
Maybe.
Anyway, we're obviously talking about Intervention. I didn't say the title of the episode, but like, I kind of never do anyway. Season 5, episode 18, it's whatever. Tom, I want to know because sometimes mm-hmm. you choose episodes that are like beloved and sometimes you choose episodes that people hate. And so I assume, again, you never know because you never know with a Tom Palmer pick what is going to happen. Famously, if you listen to One Indescribable podcast, you just guessed it on that podcast.
On the best episode of ever, whatever.
Talking about Ephraim having a premature ejaculation. Mm-hmm. I've never heard so many cum jokes in like one podcast. It was honestly impressive. But you never know what you're going to get with a Tom pick. So why did you pick this episode specifically?
I mean, it's a combination of things. There is the Spuffy. It's a good episode to talk about Spuffy, both the good and the bad. I also do think it's a light episode in the midst of a lot of dark episodes. There's some interesting stuff that happens with Buffy in this episode. We're going to talk about like her quest. Mm-hmm.
Giles and his gourd and the hokey pokey.
Yeah. So
classic.
This is more on the good side.
I can see people loving this episode. Like,
yeah, it's not everyone's like top 10, but like I think most people like it or are extremely offended by it. Yeah. So, as long as you're not extremely offended by it, but I think
you
probably end up finding it funny and liking it.
I think like I said last episode that like we are due for a tonal change, like kind of like a little breath of lightness before the back end of the season. So I do think that how this episode was placed makes a lot of sense. I'm also glad that like the looming Buffy bot didn't really, it was a quick payoff, right? Like we didn't have to sit here and worry for 6 episodes. Like when is Buffy bot coming? She came, she saw, she conquered, she's gone.
She broke.
She broke. Dead. She's a little broken. And I will also say I was I was nervous about the Buffy bot. Like I thought this was a lot better than I anticipated, because I found how Sarah Michelle Gellar played Buffy bot was really funny. Like there was a lot of like very funny moments throughout it. And I thought that this was better than I could have imagined in terms of like just like the levity of it. So I did enjoy this episode. I understand like people could be offended because Spike made a robot that looks like Buffy so that he can have sex with her. But also we already know Spike is a fucking sicko. which is why I refuse to get on this Spuffy train that you all psychopaths are on. Like, it's actually insanity that you all stand this relationship, but I guess I'm the only one that has some common sense.
I want entertainment. I'm not like Buffy should marry Spike and be with him forever.
They should be Buffy together and then marry Spike and be together forever.
I have very explicitly did not say that, actually.
If you're watching us on YouTube, his name is Spuffy Forever with 5 question marks.
I've read those as exclamation points, so.
Well, then you did not read them correctly.
I chose to see them differently, actually.
So yes, let's get into this episode properly, because I will also say this episode, I wrote down an insane amount of quotes. I think it is a very quotable episode, which always bodes well. But let's start with like the Buffy and Giles storyline, the quest storyline, where Giles wants Buffy to get back into training. Buffy is having a little bit of crisis of conscience because she feels like slaying has been making it feel like she can't love anyone properly. And part of this, I think, is the grieving process with her mom. And so she starts telling Giles, like, Giles, I love you. Dawn, I love you. Like, please know that I love you. It very much feels like a response to her mother's death of wanting to make sure her feelings are known. But I was honestly a little surprised that so soon after Joyce died, both Giles and Buffy were like, yeah, let's go out into the desert and like leave Dawn with the Scoobies. Like, both because Dawn needs to be protected and Glory's still around, but also because, like, good God, I don't know. Did they say how long it's been since Joyce passed? Like, it hasn't been that long.
I don't know. I think I read it as like a few weeks.
Yeah, I would definitely say it hasn't just been 1 week. Definitely like a few. Yeah. Like 3 or 4, maybe.
Yeah. So it hasn't been that long, but I don't know. I wonder if also Giles is like, this will get Buffy's mind off of the grief and like channel it into something else. And yeah, so they have to go to the desert. Giles brings a book, a gourd, and some twigs. We've seen this gourd before, haven't we? I feel like we joked about the gourd, and I don't remember when we saw it, but I remember joking about it.
It's just a magic gourd. You need it for gourd reasons.
I think when they broke into the initiative and the initiative like caught them and like seized them, and they're right. Like, you got all these, and they're like expecting weapons, and instead they pull out a gourd. You've got all these gourds.
Well, okay, so they needed it for at the end of season 4. They needed it for the Mega Buffy spell.
Oh, right, the like heart Buffy, the brain Buffy.
Yeah.
So they
needed it for that spell. So that was the last time that we've seen it, I think. Okay. But I also think that we've seen it 3 times. I think this is the 3rd time that we've seen it. I can't recall why we would have seen it. Maybe it was just like a background thing, like we saw it at the magic shop or something, but this is not we've seen it like 3 times, I'm pretty confident. I like the magic gourd. I think that it speaks to me and makes me feel comfortable.
It's like a ridiculous like magic prop. It's like, we're casting a spell. We gotta get a gourd. It feels just a little unserious.
Well, yeah, I mean, it isn't serious, but also like, what the fuck is an Eye of Newt? Like, you know what I mean? Like all the normal like magic spells, it's always like the eyelashes of a spider and like, I don't know, like a witch's toenail. Like it's all ridiculous.
A hair of a virgin. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do think sometimes they're just trying to troll the actor who plays Giles, because it's like, okay, and now you're going to take this gourd, you're going to shake it, and you're going to hop around.
Hokey.
Yeah. Do the hokey pokey, turn yourself around. And the reason he's doing this is because he is technically Buffy's like guide, and he needs to unassign himself from that role because he's not allowed to go where she's going. And so Buffy just like wanders off on her own as he's doing this, finds a fucking mountain lion and follows it. And like, this is, we're getting into weird territory now where we're following a mountain lion around, like, sure. Okay. And Sarah, did you immediately recognize this place as the sandy dunes from Restless?
Yeah, I did. So I this is the other thing that we were warned, or people said, like, hey, these dreams that you're going to see in Restless, a lot of it's going to play out in the future. So and it has, like, we've seen it. We've seen, like, a lot. We obviously, the reference for Dawn is a big one that stands out. I think that there's something else that they said this episode, like some word in particular that I'm not remembering at this very exact moment. But yeah, like, I definitely recognize this desert. It's a very different look than Sunnydale, so it's, like, kind of hard to forget. And we've met the first Slayer before, so I recognized the first Slayer and where we were at. And also, wasn't that the whole point was that she was going to go talk to the first Slayer? So when the first Slayer was in that, like, sandy desert location. So yeah, like, I connected the dots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Buffy is in the desert and the guide comes to her in the form of the first Slayer, who, again, we saw in this deserty wasteland in Restless. And Tom, I wrote down a lot of quotes from the first Slayer, because this is something that I very much felt like, I feel like the show sometimes is like, pay attention, this is going to be important. And this felt like one of those moments. So the first Slayer says, "You're afraid that being a Slayer means losing your humanity. You're full of love. You love with all your soul. It's brighter than the fire. Blinding. That's why you pull away from it. And that, like, she'll, like, love is pain. The Slayer forges strength from pain. Love, give, forgive, risk the pain. It is your nature. Love will bring you to your gift." And then Buffy says, "What is my gift?" And she says, "Death is your gift." And Buffy gets very upset because she's like, death isn't a gift. My mom just died. If I have to kill demons because it makes the world a better place, then I'll do it. But it's not a gift. And the first Slayer is just like, "Ah, your question has been answered," and leaves. Right. So we've learned that death is Buffy's gift, which is interesting, Tom, because I feel like we've talked a lot about Buffy's special X factor as her version of the Slayer is the Scoobies, is like the group that she surrounds herself with, right? She's not like a solo act. So death being a gift is very, very interesting.
Yeah. What was your takeaway from death is your gift? What did you think that meant?
This to me, and Sarah, you let me know how you interpreted this. I interpreted this as Buffy's mom dying will be what pushes her and, like, gives her purpose and drives her in the future. So Joyce's death, not like isn't a gift, but is what will fuel her.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, loss in general can help fuel her. I don't really know, to be honest with you. The first Slayer was crossing some territory of word vomit lore, and I was very uninterested.
Were you starting to doze off?
Sarah's getting sleepy.
I was kind of uninterested in what the first Slayer was saying, because she wasn't helpful. She wasn't helpful. Yeah. She was talking in riddles. Like, we have, like, 5 minutes? And then she's like, "You're talking a bunch of bullshit." Like, yeah. I, like, was like,
be more clear, please.
Yeah, I want you to be more clear. I don't want to, like, put, like, 2 and 2 together.
Explain it to me like I'm 5.
Yeah, she was like kind of irking me. I don't know.
What if, okay, we can't forget, lest we forget that Buffy died in a puddle in, like, season 1, right? Yeah. And her death in a puddle caused the birth of, like, Kendra or something, right? And then Kendra's death caused Faith. Sure. What if they're talking about Buffy's OG death in a puddle, her drowning? Mm-hmm. What if, like, her death is a gift because it created the other Slayers, and then Faith will come back?
Have we thought that she is unkillable? Have we thought that
Buffy?
Is unkillable.
Like plot armor wise, or like,
yes.
Or like having powers that, like, every time she dies, she'll come back somehow.
Yes, that is what I mean. Like, I'm talking about, like, an automatic rejuvenation. I'm talking about Sonic the Hedgehog falls off a cliff and comes back is what I'm talking about.
I will
about.
Say, Sarah, there is in Vampire Diaries, apparently there are rings that basically make you immune to death.
It's always a ring. Remember how Angel can live a normal life? And if you only kept the ring on, and that motherfucker was like, I don't want this ring. I'm just going to toss it into the ocean.
I'm also going to tell you, Jess, don't think too hard about Vampire Diaries in connection to Buffy. Because Vampire Diaries,
I think so little about Vampire
Diaries. Vampire Diaries comes after Buffy and Angel, and it steals a bunch from Buffy and Angel.
They do whatever the fuck they want on that show. They're like, we just make it up as we go. We're literally making it up as it's being shot. And it's fabulous. Yeah. Back to Buffy about the death is.
Okay. So, gift. Yeah. So like what happens if like she can't be killed and then like she basically like rejuvenates, or even if she does die, and I don't know where you go in the Buffy fandom, because I don't know. Where's Glory from? Whatever. Who cares? Basically, like, maybe
she's a god.
Like,
I don't know.
Maybe she can rejuvenate herself somehow because she did it already. She already died in a very shallow puddle.
She did. She died in the puddle. And maybe
that is like, oh, death is your gift. Like, you're not, when you're dead, you're not dead. I don't know.
That's fair. The other thing to think of, obviously, to take into account is like, okay, the vampires are kind of like undead, so is there like something there? I don't know what the hell this first layer is talking about, but if I'm Buffy,
exactly,
I'm
she's so unclear. That's the thing though. Also, we know that like it's called Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Like she's gonna put herself into danger for 2 more seasons plus a spinoff eventually in the future. She ain't dying.
You mean
she's
the not, reboot, or is there a different thing I don't know about? No, okay. Sorry, I was like, there's a spinoff I don't know about? Okay, we're fine.
She's not dying. So yeah, it's plot armor. Her plot armor is her gift. Is the
this
truth.
Show is so meta.
So you can't kill her because obviously she's the show.
Show would end. Yeah.
So
or you're with a robot.
You could, but I don't
except
know.
This robot took one little hit and was like down for the count. So we'll talk about it.
Also, but. Like I think, like I unless it's like all Slayers' gifts are death, which the first Slayer did not see. Like, because every Slayer experiences a ton of death in there. So it's like that's not original to her. What was the other crap that the first Slayer was saying?
I did kind of want to back up because Jeff kind of just jumped right to the end.
I blurted all of it.
There's more.
I do appreciate the thought of like, what? Okay, so she is saying, wait, okay, what's the first
She says, love is pain. The love Slayer pain. Forges also, strength from pain.
To set the scene, they're in the campfire and there's a lot of fire imagery. I think that's important to point out that they're like talking about how her love is like the fire that burns and causes the pain. And then Buffy's been kind of.
You
like
love with all your soul. It's brighter than the fire, blinding. That's why you pull away from it. Because like her love is so strong that it hurts.
Yes. Avoidant personality is her attachment style. So yes, I do think.
What is my attachment style, Sarah?
You seem pretty secure, actually. Like you're.
Look at her.
I do think that you do have a secure.
She's so secure.
I know. Mine is not secure, and it's not avoidant. I'm trying to remember what mine is.
I'm looking up the different ones because I don't know.
It's very depressing because like one time I was like up in the middle of the night and I was reading about attachment styles, and then I was like I read mine. I'm like, this is so me, and then I cried a lot. So it's very pathetic.
It's a quadrant thing.
Yeah,
there's positive, negative, and then there's secure, anxious, dismissive, avoidant, fearful, avoidant.
Yeah. Yes. I think that I am, well, I know that I am anxious attachment style. I know that I am. Like, I read it. I'm like, this is, like, literally me too.
Fear of abandonment, need for constant validation, dependent on partner for self-worth.
Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Stop. Stop calling me out. It's so bad. It's, I'm sorry. I have problems.
I do like how Sarah was like, yeah, this was traumatizing. It made me cry. And just starts laughing.
always. That's the thing. You know, like, I'm very, like, introspective. I, like, sit here and, like, I think, whatever, who cares. Unless Tom, you want to talk about your attachment style, but I don't think a normal person would.
No, I'd have to look into it more. I haven't spent time researching to cry about it.
But I do think that Buffy, so if we're, she, I think she's avoidant, and I think it is, what was the, what?
I just like to share my screen.
What are you sharing?
If people are watching us on YouTube, I was trying to Google and then this image, and then, I'm so sorry, but the secure attachment has a cute little hat. I get to wear a fedora.
Yeah. Do you agree with me, Jess? Like, after, like, a quick read, like, do you agree?
No, I don't worry about, like, being abandoned or, I don't really rely on.
Yeah.
Others, I am, for, like, constant, I am validation.
The green, look how green.
Look at how sad he's sweating. He's really fearful. Look at him.
I know. I think Buffy is avoidant. It's very important that I feel independent and self-sufficient.
Yeah, that's her.
Yeah.
That's definitely her.
So I think that, so basically, but I think that, like, that's kind of the thing. Like, because of her attachment style, I think that she is prone to push people away. We've seen this before. And I also think that when you push people away, you're like, oh, like, nobody can love me because you're pushing them away. They don't get to see the real you. And then in turn, when you think that you're unlovable, you wonder if you yourself are able to love. So
she's mentioned many times, right? She even brings up Riley and Angel this episode when talking to Giles about her, like, prior relationships and her failure to be able to love people, and thinking that being a slayer is making her even harder to love and to give out love.
Exactly. So I think it's, like, very much like that sort of a thing, like, where it's like, you wonder if you can love somebody, you wonder if people can love you. And I think that the first slayer is like, you can love so bright, blah, 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 but also
you love too hard. Yeah.
I think that it's just that Buffy probably needs to work out some of her stuff in therapy, and then she can realize that she is able to love. I think that, like, like, everybody has the ability to love, but, like, also, and be loved. It's just that, like, are you in the mindset and are you healthy enough mentally to accept that? So, I think, like, that's what the first layer is saying. If I was the first layer and I wanted to be actually helpful, I would say that in clear terms.
Well, she does. I will say she says, like, you know, that love is pain and the slayer forges strength from pain. She also says love will bring you to your gift. So, like, that maybe does back up a little bit of what we've been saying of love, the Scoobies, like, the Scoobies are her strength, having a crew around her. And she only has that because she's, like, giving and receiving the love of her community, of her friends and family.
Going back to the season one finale, she died, but then she was brought back. But the only reason that she was able to be brought back is because Xander was there. She had a friend, which apparently no other Slayer has ever had a friend who would
not allowed.
This seems so sus. There's, like, hundreds of Slayers. Nobody else had a friend. I don't know.
No one. I mean, it feels like a very isolating job to have, right?
Yeah. I mean, has anybody told Buffy that it's the system's problem and not necessarily hers? You know what I mean? Like, the whole system is basically you are brought up to be killed before the age of 18.
Right. Yeah. So, it's all fucked, the whole thing.
Yeah.
So it's not really Buffy's fault.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting, 'cause I've been thinking about why is this coming up? 'Cause, and how Buffy at this point has to be feeling with her mom dead, but with now with Dawn in her life, she's like having to step into this caretaker. She's sort of like a single mom at this point, mm-hmm. having to step in, and she must be like, I don't know if I'm emotionally capable of doing that.
Yeah. Well, she says it, right? Like, what, my mom knew everything. My mom was the one who took care of things. Like, how am I supposed to just do that now?
Right. And just both from a, like, a practical level, like, Joyce knew, like, how to pay the bills and all that. And then also just, like, Riley left earlier this season. She's kind of, like, wrapping that all in. If I can't even have a boyfriend, how am I supposed to take over, yeah. take care of a kid? It's all also sort of wrapped together.
There's also the fact that she seemingly has a father out there who she reached out to for help during this time, who essentially ghosted her in her mm-hmm. mind. I still think he's dead. But so I think, like, if we're talking about her feeling unlovable, I think, like, she's probably thinking to, like, her father as well. Her
especially because we know, we saw in, like, a long time ago in the flashbacks that, like, she feels responsible for her parents' mm-hmm. divorce because they had a big argument about her specifically. So, like, feeling that, you know, feeling abandoned in that way, yeah. mm-hmm. She probably, yeah, it probably also yeah. doesn't help with the feelings of being and a widow.
Yeah.
It's Sorry. Unfortunately become kind of a pattern in Buffy's life where she's her dad, Angel left to LA, Riley took off in a helicopter.
Well, this people, is
guys just keep leaving.
Exactly. So that aids in the attachment style things mm-hmm. because it's very much like you're finding like love, like you're choosing the people that are, I mean, like, Riley is a different story, but also he did leave. So it is a pattern that you,
yeah.
And that enable, like, that doubles down thoughts and feelings about yourself, if it's true or not true. But it's just like you're choosing these people, or you're, I mean, some of it's unfortunate luck and some of it is unintentionally intentional. So, mm-hmm. So, I thought that this was, I mean, it's always interesting when we try to understand more about the Slayers and their purpose and their past. I joke that the first Slayer was absolutely useless during this whole thing, but, and I don't even know, do you think that Buffy got anything out of it, honestly?
I think she's, it's going to stick in her brain, like what the first Slayer, or I guess the guide in the first Slayer's body said, right? Like, she jokes when she returns to the Scoobies, like, death is my gift. That's what I learned. Like, whatever that means. I don't think it's clear to her now. I feel like someone saying to her, death is your gift, literally weeks after her mother has died, is like, there's going to be a block, like there's going to be a wall of like, how dare you? I think it's going to take a minute to sink in regardless, but I do think like, it almost feels like a prophecy, like, oh, you won't understand this now, but like, I'm going to say it now and you'll understand it later, you know?
Yeah. Prophecy girly. Confirmed.
Sometimes prophecy people can be real pains in the ass. You know, it's just like, just tell me what I need to know. Stop with the riddles.
I've been saying, yeah.
Because they're like, if we just keep it vague, something's going to happen. Then you're gonna be like, that was prophesized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not really, but it was vague enough that I'm reading it as it was prophesized.
Yeah. A broken clock is right 2 times a day type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, that's what happened with Buffy on her quest.
This isn't just a game. It's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Let's briefly touch on Dawn, before we get to the whole Buffy bot and Scooby storyline, I just want to talk about the fact that Dawn stole Anya's earrings. And this felt like we're starting something here. Like we're starting a storyline of Dawn steals things. Why would she with her earrings? Like it's not a magical item. It's not like it's like the spell book, the spell component. It's earrings, literal earrings that she stole. And let's be real. Anya's gonna fucking notice that. She spent her favorite thing, which is her money, on those earrings. She's gonna notice they're gone.
You know what I'm gonna say? If you're gonna steal earrings, that's fine, but don't steal ugly earrings. That's if you want to steal your friend's shit, fine, no problem. Mm-hmm. But don't steal something ugly. And those were ugly.
If you're going to steal, I feel like the thing should be steal from a corporation, not your friends.
I've heard that before. I wonder from who. Don't steal from your friends. Now that you say that it wasn't spell components, I will say it could be spell components.
Earrings? Do you think she's trying to do like a spell on Anya? Because it could be like something owned by the person you're trying to do the spell on.
Maybe she's trying to gather components from everybody. Maybe first is Anya, next will be Xander, Tara, or Willow. I think that, you know, like she has already done one spell behind people's backs. Like who's to say that this is not a first? And I think like it's pretty common. I mean, yeah, it's like the hair of people, the toenails or whatever, but also it's just like,
keep going to toenails. I don't know why. Because people, like, there are eyelashes, there's hair. Like, yes. There's so many options, and you go to toenails.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, I'm just, like, in that toenail
in a toenail kind of mood.
Ew. What do you think the spell is if she's collecting components from everyone? What's the spell? What's she plotting?
Well, she doesn't have a crush on Xander anymore. So I don't think it has anything to do with like getting rid of Anya. She wants her job. She wants Anya's job at the magic shop.
I think okay. Is it just a
doing a Anya huge spell to get a job?
Get her fired.
No.
Maybe she wants to be a vengeance demon.
Maybe. But she's not the vengeance demon anymore.
Yeah, that's right. We saw from the Buffy bot interface that she is an ex-demon specifically.
What was that? A what?
It said on her interface, ex-demon.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I couldn't. What kind of spell? If she was doing spells on everybody, I don't know. I think like sometimes she's just likes a little bit of chaos. Maybe something like not harmless, but like kind of harmless, like I don't know, like making people's hair fall out. You know what I mean? Something like that.
So harmless.
Some.
Sarah, I feel like if your hair fell out, you would not be saying this was a harmless.
My hair probably does fall. I mean, it does fall out. Just ask my robot vacuum.
I think it's maybe just like a teen thing. Like she's just stealing things.
A little bit of steelies. Yeah.
I think so. But I wish she would just shoplift instead.
A lot of people just go through. I've never stolen from my friends. But
not either.
Yeah. Weird. Yeah. I try on my friends' shoes. Like I like to go through my friends' things, but I don't
feel like you'd asked me once like what size shoe I wore because you were like, I want to I'm pretty sure when you were at my house you said you tried on my boots, but I have a much larger foot than you. So
Jess has like a really good boot collection that I don't think that she utilizes, but I don't know if you have anymore, but she used to have like 15 pairs of really nice like riding boots or like different boot, and they were, I'm like, your boot collection is beautiful. So then like I did try them on, but we don't have the same. I mean, Jess is like 6 inches taller than me.
Yeah. I wear a size 10, so I got them big old feet.
So you were like gonna steal them because Jess wasn't using them properly.
I was just trying them on because I didn't have boots like that. So I was like, oh, like these, like I have found stuff of my friends that I like, and then I purchased the same thing. So maybe that was my intention of like, oh, like
if I like these, yeah, it's like going to a store.
Yeah. So, but no, I don't steal from my friends or my siblings' friends. But yeah, I think it has less to do. I think it has to do with like I need to collect spell components of people around me, even if like, hey, like let me take this for like a rainy day type of thing. She's like a little chaos demon. She is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What if she agreed with Sarah and was like, these are ugly, I need to make sure Anya never wears them.
I'm gonna throw these away.
You know what? Actually, I would do that. Yeah, I would throw out something if I hated it of my friend. You know, it's like, this is a very unfortunate, ugly thing. Let me just throw it out.
Let me help you out here.
Yeah.
So that's what's going on with Dawn. And she's staying with the Scoobies because we said Buffy is on her little quest, which we'll talk about the Scoobies because they inevitably come into the plot with Spike and the Buffy bot. I wrote down just so many Buffy bot quotes because they were all so funny. I thought Sarah Michelle Gellar did an absolutely fabulous job of like making it so that it is so obvious that it is not her. Like the smiling was just nonstop. I want to hurt you, but I can't resist the sinister attraction of your cold and muscular body. I could never do it. Drops the stake. I'm helpless against you, you fiend. Darn your sinister attraction. And my favorite. Oh, Spike, devour me.
Devour me.
It was great. And I think that she did Sarah Michelle Gellar did a great job of watching the previous bot, and her delivery of those lines were like the different inflections were very specific. And I felt that Sarah Michelle Gellar studied what that actress did and imitated it really well. And I was very impressed by that as well. But yeah, there was a lot of like very funny moments. I loved when she interacted with her friends, with the Scoobies. And it was like Spike gave like the most like surface level information about these people. And Buffybot reciting like, you are a carpenter, or like you like
you are my me. Friend.
Yeah, yeah. You're my friend.
Yeah, I wrote you these down that. Gay. The info on Xander was friend, carpenter, dates Anya. The info on Anya was dates Xander, likes money, ex-demon. And then
she was like, how's your money? And Anya was like, really good, thank you.
Thank you for asking. No one ever asks me about that. And Willow is best friend, gay, 1999 to present, witch, and good with computers. So Willow got an extra. Willow got an extra one.
Which I guess like that just is like, how much Spike it like pays.
I think he respects her or likes her. Yeah. Maybe a little bit more.
Yeah. And then did we see anybody else? Because it was very enjoyable. I really liked seeing.
Yeah.
Those.
We didn't get a Tara one. No, those were the only three. And we know that that Spike did not program Giles's name correctly.
Oh my God.
Giles.
That was so funny too. I loved that. And then real Buffy said Giles as well. And Giles being so like, he didn't even program my name correctly. Like, what is this bullshit?
Yeah. And the note about Angel. Angel's lame. His hair grows straight up and he's bloody stupid.
Yes, I know. I loved it. I honestly did. This is why I was just like, oh, this is better than I ever could have anticipated. Because like we get to see how Spike thinks of these people in like a backwards way. And I thought that was really fun. But also Spike commenting on Angel's hair this episode, when Spike's hair this episode was absolutely revolting. Like,
I mean, he was having so much sex, Sarah.
It was horrible. I hated it.
That was classic sex hair.
If he doesn't slick it back, like any sort of like ounce of like you're not terrible looking gets eliminated, because I hated what was going on with his hair today. It was so bad. I hated it. Just my opinion.
So we talked about Spike gets the Buffy bot. Then they have a bunch of sex. The problem becomes when Buffy bot goes out to go slaying and bumps into Xander and Anya, who are on patrol. Buffy is supposed to be in the desert on her quest, and obviously Buffy is acting very strangely. Xander realizes, like, she didn't even ask about Dawn, so goes back to check on her because he left her with Spike, and he sees them fucking in the cemetery, and Buffy's saying, as she's riding him, she's saying, "You're the big bad. You're the big bad."
I liked that Buffy bot decided that she was a top girly. So,
yeah.
I think they did it a lot of different ways, Sarah, to be fair.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if, like, this was, once again, a Spike-specific preference.
I think Spike was into all of it. It's Spike, and he's wearing a coat. Just what? It was so perfect. And Xander and Anya are just like, what the hell is going on? And of course, also simultaneously, Glibglobs, the Glibglobian population, is spying on Buffy and all her friends. And so they're seeing, like, oh, Buffy loves Spike. Like, she's very concerned about him. Maybe he's the key.
Because Glory, it, like, now knows that it's a human that is hiding, a person, thank you, that's hiding the key. So she was like, okay, you need to find somebody. Number one, it has to be somebody kind of new. Right. And number two, it has to be somebody that, like, she protects above all else. So it's the Glibglob's job to find out who that person is. And the Glibgly.
The Glibglob job.
So they are, I mean, like, it was a little astute to assume. I don't blame the Glibglobs for thinking it could be Spike. He kind of fits the bill, like, somebody that she seemingly knew, somebody that she was protecting all else. So they didn't know that he was a vampire, or even if they did know that, they didn't know that that meant that, like, he was impure. So I thought that the different spying was interesting. Very lucky that Dawn wasn't in the mix for this, but yeah, also they, I don't know, they won't think it is Dawn, because,
well, it really is
around for a while.
Exactly. Like, the memory thing messes that up, but also, like, I mean, think about it. If Buffy is trying to protect this key at all costs, theoretically, the key should not be out patrolling and, like, fighting vampires. That's so true. Like, you know, but the Glibglobs aren't very intelligent. And so meanwhile, right, the Scoobies find out about Buffy bot, but they think Buffy fucking Spike. Xander is like, what is happening? What is going on? He goes back to the rest of the Scoobies, goes to Willow and Tara. And I really enjoyed Tara being like, people do things when they're grieving. It's like, oh, she's fucking Spike. What? Has she lost her mind?
Yeah, it was pretty good. I do think if this wasn't right after Joyce's death, I think they would have gotten to Robot quicker. Like, they might have figured that out, but they're like, Joyce just died. Anything could happen with Buffy. She's
yeah.
Who knows what could happen right now. I guess they're just not as understanding of the Spike possibility.
It was great. I did love all of their reactions. And Xander has decided, I'm going to go talk to, like, Spike and Buffy, because this isn't right. Like, this isn't okay. So he confronts Spike. And I mean, I thought this was, like, very, like, nice friend thing to do, and basically be like, you're taking advantage of someone whose mom just died. Like, it's not okay. Like, I'm going to take care of you if you don't stop it. And in the middle of all of this, the Glibglobians come in as Buffybot is, like, hiding in the creepy shrine area that we've seen before. And the Glibglobians come in, knock Xander out, and take Spike because they think he is the key. So it's like a whole mess. Buffybot, of course, is like, oh, no, my Spikey. Oh, no, he's been taken. So she goes to see Willow.
Right, because, like, Xander walked in. Buffy was giving Spike a blowjob, and he's like, oh, you gotta go hide in the whatchamacallit. But then she's like, I couldn't be without you for more than 2 minutes. And it's like, we gotta go rescue Spike.
Yeah, I feel like, okay, because there were times, right, when she's like pretending to like slay him, right? She has like the stake to his chest. She like rips his shirt open. Mm-hmm. But she was like, I felt like Spike would have been turned off by how much she was like, oh, Spike. Like she was like too nice to him. I feel like he loves the like meanness, you know, I think he thrives on that.
I think it could have came out eventually, kind of like how Warren got sick of Amber.
Yeah.
And how it got old quick. I think that Spike would have been the same, which is a programming issue from Warren. Or maybe he learned his lesson and he would have programmed it differently. And in time, a different program would boot up where Buffy is being sassier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think the robot has it in it to be like actually like sassy and combative. Like, I don't think the reason why Spike and Buffy, why some people are shipping them, is because of the sparks and the tension. And I just don't think that was ever going to be there. And right. Jess is doing weird things with her eyebrows.
Jeez, Tom, they didn't know that on the audio only version. They do have good chemistry. It's not my fault. But yeah, so Buffy about's like freaking out that Spike is now missing. So she goes to Willow, who is her best friend, gay, 1999 to present, yeah, witch, and good with computers. And I love Willow being like, but it's okay if you just had sex with Spike the one time. And she's like, oh no, it wasn't just one time. It was lots of times and lots of different ways. I can make sketches. Like, so over the top. And she's like, I'm so sorry I upset you. You're my best friend. It's just like so over the top. And I totally agree with you, Tom. I think the only reason they could get away with the Scoobies not realizing that Buffybot is a robot, because they've literally been around the Warren robot girl, is because of Joyce's death, because they are like, why is Buffy acting so strangely? Oh, obviously her mom died. She's having like a crisis. She's having a meltdown. But Xander comes in, he tells everybody that Spike has gotten taken. And so they all go to try to assemble some weapons and get a plan together. And of course, they all turn to Buffy, Sarah, wanting to know, Buffy, what's the plan? How should I know? Why are you looking at me? It's like the complete antithesis of Buffy.
But also, like, I like that Xander was just like very validating in that moment. And he was just like, you're right. Like, we shouldn't turn to you for all the answers. No problem. Yeah. He's just like, if you want to go change and like we get your weapons, like, let's go. And that's when the real Buffy comes back from her mission, her journey, her quest.
Yeah.
And she, you know, you can automatically tell a difference between her attitude or like how she exists in their world. And I like how, you know, that's when they decide to be like, okay, like, you know, the Spike thing is like getting out of control, blah, 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 blah. And they're like, she's like, what are you talking about? I never was with Spike. And they're like, we saw you. And then of course, like, Buffy Bot comes in and they're like, oh my gosh, we've seen this before. Like, and they're like, it's two Buffys. And they're like, and Buffy was like, no, that's a robot. Why the heck can you guys not tell between me and a robot? And that was very funny. Very funny. I liked that. I liked that reveal, that moment.
Yeah, I like the juxtaposition between Buffy Bot, who's like wearing a skirt, wearing like all pink, so smiley, like almost giving like elf, and like, I love smiling. Smiling's my favorite. Like, her default is smile. And then Buffy, who is much more like, obviously she's having a tough time, so she's more reserved. She has like her hair in like a low pony. She's wearing pants. We always see Buffy in pants. Like, I feel like it's super rare to see her in anything but pants. Even at the funeral, I noticed actually she was wearing like dress pants and stuff. So yeah, it is off to see Buffy wearing a skirt. And I love this. I especially loved the line, the like, I who, the what with the huh, like, just Buffy being like, what are you talking about?
And then Santa's like, we get it. He's really like good looking and in that tight muscular. did you write down that quote?
Yeah, no one is judging you. It's understandable. Spike is strong and mysterious and sort of compact, but well muscled. And Buffy says, I'm not having sex with Spike, but I'm starting to think that you might be. it was so good. Spike's mine. Who's straddling Spike? They all decide, okay, we have to go figure out, like, because they, you know, once the real Buffy learns that Spike has been taken by Glory, she's worried that he will tell that Dawn is the key. So she's like, okay, I remember that creepy serpent thing and where it was running to. So maybe from here we can find Glory. Meanwhile, freaking Glory, holy shit, my God. She has Spike. She is torturing this man. She literally shoves a finger inside of him and starts yelling at him because she knows he is a vampire, so he can't be the key. But she also knows he might have some helpful information, so she's gonna torture the fuck out of him.
It was intense.
Like, it was a lot.
Yeah, it was intense. And I thought, like, these it's fun to see Glory get to be evil and get to, you know, a lot of the times we get to just see her say funny lines and kind of have her mentee bees or like a lot of like planning, and we don't get to see her. We've seen her fight before. We haven't seen her like torture somebody before. So that was cool to see. And, you know, Spike, to his credit, held out. And I knew that he wasn't going to yap about it. So, you know, very lucky that like the Scoobies went and found him, and they did, because I do think that like he would have gone like as far as possible without saying anything about it. And I liked that like he like did a fake out, and like the Glib Globs was like, we'll bring Bob Barker, no problem. Like, Bob Barker from The Price is Right, we'll go and get him and bring him back. And Glory was like, Glory's rage, like, no, you stupid dumb fucks, it's not Bob Barker. I love that Glory knows who Bob Barker is. And she was like, he's old as hell. Like, and yeah. Like, you know,
Bob Barker catching strays.
Bob Barker gets, you know, called out in a lot of shows. So I think that, didn't Barney think that was his dad and How I Met Your Mother?
Yes.
For
yes.
A really long time.
Yeah.
So I think that it was, It was really cool to see. And yeah, he did wind up like escaping, jumping on like the elevator.
That was wild.
Yeah.
His escape, especially because I love that he was able to get under Glory's skin a bit as well by not only faking out with the Bob Barker thing, but then like throwing in some real jabs, like where it would hurt her, where he says, the Slayer's going to kick your skanky lopsided ass back to whatever place you would take a cheap, whorish fashion victim ex-god like you. And she's just like, what? Like, she's like looking at her own butt. Like, she's very offended by all of these things.
I mean, he calls her like a bottle blonde too, which is.
Yeah. He said her hair was a bad perm, I think.
Oh yeah.
Which, like, very, it definitely isn't, but like I would be offended if I were her too.
Could be a perm, I don't know,
but looks her hair curls are gorgeous. Stop it, Spike, stop it.
I also do think, because what Spike did with the Buffy bot was gross, the writers were like, we need the audience to forgive Spike, so we need to have him be tortured and punished for what he did.
Yeah, we're gonna stick a finger in him. Yeah.
And so that kind of gives permission for the audience to forgive him, even if they really shouldn't. But
yeah, which they
feel how they feel. One,
she like cuts his chest, sticks a finger in him, shoves him up against a wall. His face looks like beaten. He really does take a beating. He does escape just as Buffy, the Scoobies, and the Buffy bot come in, fight, fight, fight. We all know kicky punchy stuff happens. Buffy bot like has a little bit of a malfunction, or maybe when she gets slammed against the wall, a screw comes loose. I don't know. Something bad happens to her. And
can I just take a moment to say, though, yes, the crossbows are useless. Like, whenever they have crossbows, it's just like they spend so much time like aiming them,
loading
and
it,
and one shot off, and it never does anything.
Train with a real bow. Like, either do that or use something else.
I mean, they're always going to end up punching, so I don't even know why they bother.
Yeah, just carry a lot of sticks. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they end up, like, defeating the Glibglobians, and the Glibglobians return to Glur, and they're like, oh my god, she was everywhere. She was amazing. Wow, we couldn't take her.
Yeah. Not citing that there was, like, two of them. They just...
How did they not notice? The Glibglobians are fucking horrible minions.
No, okay. Come on. They're trying their best.
I don't know how. I truly don't know how they were able to stealth around so much, looking like they do and looking like they're up to shit. You know what I mean? Like, the Glibglobs don't look innocent.
Okay. Well, so they're not good at detecting anything. Deception, but they are good at being sneaky.
Complimentary towards Glory.
Oh, they're so, I mean, the amount of adjectives, adjectives that they can come up with. I mean, the main Glibglob did a good job extracting information from Ben, so...
I think that's more of just the bar is so low. Ben is so stupid. Like, he gave it up. They didn't torture him at all. He just said the thing he wasn't supposed to say.
Yeah, I know. I hate him. Yeah. You know that I do. You know that I don't like that man.
I mean, we heard from Glory. She was getting nervous because, like, she's saying, like, oh, I'm, like, sharing my body with, like, my enemy.
I still don't know how this happened, but we know that they're brother and sister. I'm fully in on, like, somehow they got cursed or she got punished and they had to share a body that way. Like, I think it's the only way. And this whole thing is a logistical nightmare, to be honest with you. So
what if you're in the middle of, like, peeing and your body changes back? Like, nightmare.
I personally choose to believe that the magic waits until after you're done going to the bathroom.
Just saying. She says, I'm a god in exile, so it seems like she was banished.
She was
From the hellfires of home and sharing my body with an enemy that stabs my boys in their fleshy little stomachs.
Wasn't the exile thing we knew about that before?
Because that's why she wants the key. She wants to get back.
She wants
to get back. So we did know that she was in exile. But what does she knows she do?
And basically she's saying, like, we're running out of time. Like, which we knew. Like, this is why she's, like, feeling under the gun.
She's from hell, if she's from the underworld, like, what bad thing do you have to do to get punished by getting kicked out of the underworld? If you know what I mean. Like, they are notoriously bad down there. So
what if she did something good? That doesn't make sense, though.
I mean, sure.
Or she did something bad to another god. Like, that maybe.
Yeah. Or, like, maybe she, like, there's, you know, like, it kind of just makes me think of Hercules and, like, Hades. And he's just like, or, like, those, like, little, like, creepy ladies that are, like, around the pot. Yeah. And, like, they're like, there's rhyme or reason to when the death comes. And maybe what's her face? Glory was like, she was just like, I'm taking lives just because I feel like it. And maybe there's, like, some other people that are like, oh, like, you can't do that. Everybody has a life, this string. They have to live out their string. And, like, she was cutting the string short. And they're like, you are fired from your god of death thing. And
I wonder,
you are exiled. But then, like, how does Ben, like, come into it? Maybe he's, like, was the god of life. That would tie into the doctor thing. And, like, they had to, like, balance each other out. And then they no longer balanced each other out because she was taking advantage. But then he said that he always has to clean up her shit. So I don't know. I think that maybe I'm probably, well, this might be a, oh, like, what you're coming up with is so much more interesting. What actually happened? They're just Jekyll and Hyde. But, like, I feel like that would make sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The only other option I could think of is, like, is this a test? Like, she got sent away. Like, this is like a quest of sorts. Like,
if she can get back, she'll get like some sort of reward.
Yeah, like she's on a mission because she's next in line to inherit the hell throne or something. But like, I don't know. Ben is her brother. I don't know.
Not as Ben, who is seemingly a good guy, even though that's debatable.
He's an idiot good guy.
Gets stuck with her. How was he stuck with her to begin with? Unless he was always kind of like, I don't know, kind of like he, you know, in the new Critical Role season, mm-hmm. like we have Tierney. Tierney is like a demon and she's like supposed to be evil and like everybody yeah. else around her is evil, but like she's kind of not evil, even though she has a job to be evil. Like maybe that's what Ben is. He just sucks at being evil, but then why would you have to go clean up her messes? I don't know. I'm thinking, I guess, too much into it, but
well, we'll figure it out within a few episodes at least.
I hope so.
I do think Ben did summon the demon that ate a bunch of people.
Yes. The weird, creepy podling.
I don't know if he's in like in D&D terms, if he's in the good.
Yeah, cleaning up her mess was like clean up her mess on Earth by doing other bad things.
Yeah, I think he's neutral at best.
Yeah, well, he's lying about being a physician, so
that we have established. Okay, so Willow decides, okay, the Buffy bot, we could fix it very easily, but we're not gonna, because Spike definitely was not using the Buffy bot to play checkers with, even though that's what Tara told Dawn. No one believes that. And we all knew the moment that Buffy in the skirt and everything walked into Spike's crypt that was not Buffy bot. We all knew, right? Like Sarah, you knew. We all knew.
Yeah. Okay. Especially because the scene before was like, I need to make sure like that he didn't say anything. I need to know for sure, because if he did say something that Dawn and I have to leave, we have to escape. So yeah, but I think that she did a good job.
Spike, you're covered in sexy wounds.
But I also think she did a good job of making it seem like she's the real Buffy pretending to be the fake Buffy. If that makes any sense. Like, I think that there's like a distinction between Buffy and Buffy pretending to be Buffy bot. Like somehow.
Yeah. Oh, you mean Sarah Michelle Gellar did a great job with that. Yes.
I was very able to detect fake Buffy pretending to be fake Buffy, which is
because she wasn't like, there wasn't like as much smiling and it felt much more like put on.
Yeah. So once again, I felt like Sarah Michelle Gellar did a phenomenal job, which is, I think, like one of the good things about the season is just like her acting is continuously getting elevated throughout the series.
Yeah,
so
she did all of this on the same season where she did The Body.
Exactly.
And she had to do all that. Like, she should have won an Emmy for this season. Just straight up.
It honestly is incredible. And I do agree with you, Sarah. I think like her acting, not that she was bad in season one, because that's not what I'm saying. You can just feel that she has come into her own as an actor. Like she has, because like, I mean, I assume season one was like one of her very first acting things, or like one of her first serious, like ongoing acting gigs.
Yeah, she came from a soap opera.
Okay, so I just think like this, I think she has learned and grown with the show. She was really impressive. And she, again, wants to know what Spike had told Glory. And so she says, oh, well, like I can go tell Glory that Dawn is the key. And he immediately stops her. He says, the other Buffy would not like if anything happened to Dawn. It'd destroy her. I couldn't live her being in that much pain. Let Glory kill me first. And this is when real Buffy kisses Spike. It is a tiny kiss. It is a soft kiss. It is a very quick, like, thank you for not giving up my sister and ruining our lives kiss. She moves back and he knows that's not how Buffy bot kisses. He knows. And I love, Tom, I like how the show knows that the audience is smart enough to not have to be like told all of this.
Right.
We're shown it, right? By the look on Spike's face and then him asking, and my robot, you know, like, it's so smart.
Yeah. What Why do you think Buffy kissed her? Like you said, it's a thank you. Do you think there's more, anything more to it? Not even just this, like what? Well, like what do you think? Especially in the context of this episode, where Buffy's like thinking about, is she capable of love? Mm. Is there more? Is there anything more to it than just this? This act was meant something to me.
You can insinuate that that might be the case, but I absolutely fucking refuse. So I say no. It was a thank you kiss, a pity kiss, a that's it, you know, because absolutely. I like what she says after that as she's leaving. She was just like, what you did was that was obscene and disgusting and really vile, but and not real, but what you did was real. I think like she is appreciative. I think that in a meta lens, this opens up an opportunity, a door that, you know, like I think that this is, yeah, I think this opens a door for something more eventually, but I don't like it at the moment. I don't think that he is a, I like when he does these good things and I like when he's the underdog, but I still cannot forgive Spike for how awful he treats women in general. And I don't want Buffy to be near that. But yeah, I think that in this moment, it was a sigh of relief. Appreciation.
That's how I feel.
Do you think on any level it's anything more calculated than that? Is there any part of
like a manipulation sort of a thing?
Is there any manipulation?
I think I largely agree because of the lines after of her saying like, what you did for Dawn and me, that was actually a real show of love. Like that was actually a noble and kind thing to do. And what you did with that robot was wrong and messed up. So because she says those things, it does partly feel like a, I'm going to kiss you as like a thank you, as a like, cause she knows he's going to know she's not Buffy bot. It's not like she's trying to like get one over on him there. It's more so a, this kiss is real. Those kisses you had with the Buffy bot were not real at all. They were a manipulation. They were, you know, disgusting. They were programmed. In terms of the love aspect of her feeling love, I do think there is an aspect of like, she is going through so many emotions right now. And there is so much on her plate and we've talked so much at length about like how much Buffy is having to juggle and manage. And I think for her to be able to breathe a sigh of relief that somebody else had her back, not that the Scoobies don't, of course they always do, but this was just one thing that while she was away, like didn't get fucked up, that he had her back, that he didn't give them up. I think it is something that she like very much appreciates and wanted to show that appreciation in a way that Spike would like, right? Like we know she knows his feelings for her. So I think it can be like both, but I don't think she kissed him as like a, I am romantically interested in you. Right. I think it was more so because she knew it was something he would like and she wanted to give that to him because of what he did for her and Dawn.
Yeah.
I don't think it was a manipulation though. I don't, and maybe it was, but like, I don't know. I think if Buffy was trying to manipulate Spike, I think it may be a little bit more overt than that.
I don't know if that's really in Buffy's, like, have we seen anything like that in Buffy's character?
I don't think we have.
I can't think of anything.
I was honestly just thinking about it because I do think this is like the first sort of thing she's like positively, she's basically never said a nice thing to Spike in their entire interactions. This is like the one time she's like giving him some positive reinforcement, and this is kind of a weird way of thinking about it. But if you think of Spike as like being trained, he's got the chip
No, I think like you're right. Like I think that like that sort of thing, I mean, knowing Spike and a little bit of Spike's past, the way for Spike to actually become good, and I think it is like positive reinforcement. Like I think it is like if he gets the cookie, the treat, then he will be motivated to keep doing good. And I think that we kind of saw that with him, like at one point when he first got the chip of like, oh, like I can kill demons. And then I am like, feel like I did good job. And because I do good job, I want to do more good job. But because of how certain bad decisions on his part, but also how people treat him, he gets, you know, he feels that rejection and then he pushes away and then he like does bad things. Like he's, it's very much like he's a dog, but also, I don't know. I feel like sometimes people can be a lot like dogs in how you train their behavior. So,
I mean, he is evil. Like if he didn't have the chip in his head, he'd be out killing people. I think maybe. That was my takeaway from Crush. Like when Drusilla was around, he was okay with people dying.
But he didn't feel good about it. Like when he, once again, like when he still was like, hey, like I will kill Drusilla for you. Like, I don't know. Like, I think he's on the path to being good, like actually good. I think that he just needs, I don't know. I think he does need the positive reinforcement. It's kind of like Faith in a way, because of how everybody treated Faith and how like she wasn't accepted. She was kind of like, fuck this. I'm going to be like bad. I'm going to do bad things. I still think that if people like Buffy in particular was more accepting of Faith and brought her in more and gave her the positive reinforcement, I don't know, in my opinion, if Faith would have gone the path that she wound up going down. I don't know. What do you think, Jess?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I definitely think that if I think a lot of it is environmental, right? Like we saw how Spike was treated when he was a human. And like that certainly influenced how he ended up acting as a vampire. Obviously being a vampire changes your, not personality, like anatomy in a way that you like, you revel in being evil more. You don't have the moral quandaries that humans do. But yeah, I mean, I agree, Tom, that without the chip, he certainly would still be killing no problem. It's the chip that has made it impossible, so he's had to adapt. And I think he always had a little bit of a fixation with Buffy anyway. I think he likes their back and forth, he likes the chemistry they have, and I do think he likes the idea of a person who like, this shouldn't work, right? Like she's supposed to hate me, I'm supposed to hate her. He's killed two other Slayers. Like he has a fixation with Slayers in general. And we've talked a lot about like, okay, the opposite of love isn't hate, it's apathy. So like love and hate are closer together. And I don't know, it's interesting. I don't know how the show could ever resolve removing the chip from Spike's head and not having him immediately resort to who he was. Like it would take a lot of character development to get there. I don't know that the show even wants to do that, but yeah, at this point it would surprise me if we didn't inevitably get a Buffy thing, even if it was very brief.
For the Buffy part of that, what would, for the two of you, what do you think would need to happen for you to, would you buy that from Buffy, or what would need to happen for you to buy that? Because I think the idea that Spike would fall in love with Buffy makes a lot of sense narratively, and yeah. I think it's a pretty compelling story. But the question is it like a good Buffy story for her to get involved in Spike? Is there like what does the character of Buffy actually get out of giving Spike?
I think for her to actually like act on anything with Spike, I almost feel like it would have to be because of like not being drunk, but like being altered in some way that whereas like she acts out of the norm. I don't know. I just think it would take so much unless he like attempted to sacrifice himself for Dawn, maybe. Like it would take so much.
I can see it happening just based off of like desire. Like just, you know, I think that she could probably get to finding him hot faster than falling in love with him. And I think that it could be more of a physical thing initially, and then love. I don't know. Like I, once again, like I get maybe him get her getting to know him more and like understand like his background, but I don't know. Like, okay, so like we know that she didn't really love Riley, right? Like she didn't say it. Maybe she like was getting there and she needed more time, and if it wasn't for all these other factors, she would have gotten there a lot sooner.
I don't think she allowed herself to get there, because I the show has basically said like after Angel she wasn't up for it. And so with Riley, she entered that relationship with like her guard up.
Yeah. So like, and do I think that she was like in love with Angel? I kind of think it's more of like your first love. Like maybe it's like a young love. Like, do I think that, like, I think that like her true, if she does get into a true love relationship, like it's one of those things where it's just like you love them and you think that you love them, but do you really love them? Because, or is it just like you're young and it's like exciting and it's passionate? You know what I mean? Like when you find like the person that you're meant to be with, like it's just like on so many, like a higher level of love. Maybe I'm reading it incorrectly and they really did, but like honestly, like I don't know, like how do they really like know each other that well? I don't like, but anyway, I think that for Spike, I just like can only see it starting with passion. Maybe like she gets to know him better, maybe he keeps doing good, but like I can't like imagine a world. It feels like fan service, honestly, more than anything else, of how and why they would get there, which I think like might, because I fully can understand and buy in why like people are very excited about their chemistry. Like I think it stems from that episode where Willow did that spell and fucks everything up like normal. And then, like, it's the, you know, the episode where, like, Buffy's, like, on her lap. Something, oh, we're getting married. Yeah. Like, yes. I think it stems from that. And also, like, they're bickering. So, like, I can understand why, like, the fandom, it's just, like, very much, like, I understand why the fandom's, like, into it. Because it feels very fandom-y. Like, if you've been a part of any fandom, like, you know how people, fans, like slap these two people together, and like even if they work
Draco
or don't
Hermione.
Work, that's exactly what I was about to say. Yeah, like there's no world where Draco and Hermione should or would ever be together, but it feels like very fan servicey to entertain that. And I just like, it's gonna be a really tough time for me to not feel, I mean, things could happen. I'm not saying that like I can never be into it, but like I'm blabbing. Just tell me to shut the fuck up. I'm blabbing.
No, everything you're saying is good. I agree that it's fans. Like the fans wanted this before the writers showed any interest in going there. Like the fans have been talking about it since season two. Like the moment Spike showed up, the fans were into it.
People love to ship enemies, right? Like enemies to lovers is a very common trope, so it's unsurprising. I think Sarah, the problem is what you're saying in terms of it feeling fan servicey. It's because the fans wanted it before the writers started writing it. So it feels like it's a gift to the fans versus like something that has come up naturally, right?
How are we going to make it, like Tom said, make it make sense for Buffy to be into Spike? And I mean, I hope that the writers do a good job. I can't really think of like what exactly that will be, but yeah, like I just feel like if it happens, I hope that it feels earned, and I hope that it's not like, let's slap these two people together because everybody wants it. I don't know, like, especially because like I'm not into the enemies to lovers trope, and especially in this situation as well. So I'm sure for a ton of people it works, and I'm happy for you, but I would not want to live in an enemies to lovers trope. I don't want that for myself, and I don't want that for my friends, but
it's, yeah, it's definitely not something that should happen in the real world. I think it's something that we kind of allow ourselves to explore in fiction and fantasy shows. Can I ask, do you think they've earned the Spike side of it? Like, do you feel like Spike having this crush on Buffy, do you feel like that has been natural, like the writers have done that? Or do you feel like that's also just fan service?
No, I actually do think it works for me. And I think it's, it works because it's like a fascination thing. I don't think that he actually is in love with her. That's the thing. Like, I think that it's like an infatuation, an obsession, because like, how much does he really know Buffy or understand her? I think that he probably thinks that he knows her and understands her, but I think that, but I also think that like they've been doing the work for like a season or so of like leading this up. And Drew said that she saw it before. Well, we've seen it since basically at the end of season two, where he could have gotten her killed, but he worked with her. And so it kind of pays off there, where like, you know, like his intentions are always a little like, a little skewed. Like he is very like self-serving and like takes, you know, like it's not black and white for him. So like, I think it's more so works for him. And once again, like, I think that from what we've seen in his past, it makes a lot of sense for him to fall in love with somebody that doesn't give him the time of day. We literally saw that with that girl that he wrote the poems for. I don't remember her name.
Oh, I don't know her name. She was from Grey's Anatomy, though.
Who isn't from Grey's Anatomy?
Cecily.
Everyone is from Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah, I think like it's, but once again, it's just like, I think that it's like kind of like a bad habit of his to take an infatuation with a woman that is kind of mean to her and to him and doesn't want to give him the time of day and ultimately humiliates him. Drew was like not like that. And I don't know. Oh, was she mean? I don't know. Was she mean to him?
He was more mean to her than she was to him.
Right. She did cheat on him with the Chaos Demon.
Yeah,
but I meant more on screen
she was mad. Okay, like the thing was that like he got frustrated with her because she was ill. I forget like what the illness was, but wasn't she ill when we first met her?
He was in a wheelchair for a bit.
No, that was after the fact. Because
somewhere in Europe they had an encounter and she got like injured and
because she wasn't at her full power when we first meet Drew, and he was annoyed at her during those times, and then he got put into the wheelchair and then felt very like impotent, which is like kind of like a foreshadowing of what actually happens to him later, and then she had to like pick up the slack. Then he helped Buffy. Then she was like, that's disgusting, why would you help the Slayer? I'm not attracted to you, I'm gonna cheat on you. So I feel like, but he was very dismissive. That's why I don't think I liked him in the first place, because he was so like dismissive of her and like her dolls and her like her little fantasies. Like that's what like I remember like being irked by how he treated Drew in season two. So it's been a thing. And it's and when he's not involved with women, I'm like, I love everything that he's I like a lot of what he's doing. I think he's funny. Like I like him being the underdog. I don't know. I'm sorry. Is there anything else from this episode, Jess?
No.
No. Okay.
No.
I guess I can just spend the next 30 minutes about like how Spike just drives me up the wall crazy sometimes, but it's fine. We should talk about Cordy's Corner.
Let's do Cordy's Corner. I watched Angel. The episode is Dead End. Sarah, did you skip this one?
Yeah, I didn't. I didn't watch this week.
So I think I know who the AJ had alluded that I think one or two maybe characters leave the show. Mm-hmm. I think I know one of them because our guy, one-handed Lindsay, leaves town, leaves LA. He works at the lawyer place. He's a bad guy.
Yes, I remember Lindsay. Yes.
So it's a song. It's what is it called? What's the something song? Swan song for Lindsay this episode. We spent a lot of time with Lindsay this episode, Tom.
I got confused because at one point Lindsay actually sang a song, so I thought
he maybe did sing a song. So the whole episode is basically like, don't you feel bad for Lindsay? He only has one hand, and then Angel smashed his plastic hand, and then the company is like, well, don't worry, we got you a doctor's appointment today to give you a hand transplant, which apparently is so easy and quick and no big deal that he's able to like play a guitar that very next day. But the problem is, Sarah, do you want your new hand if it is somebody else's hand that is like still alive and is making you write kill, kill, kill and stab your other hand?
Yeah, this is a tale as old as time of getting a body transplant by somebody who is evil and then you are taken over by the evil. I know this story. So he has an evil hand and the evil hand wants him to kill and writes kill.
But yes, and here's the thing though.
No
so
problem.
He, of course, he can play the guitar. He can sing. Where's he gonna go? The karaoke bar.
Well, yeah.
So he goes there. He sings for his life. In come Cordy's crew, Cordy and the gang. They show up.
Poor Cordy's been having this vision of this guy stabbing his own eye, and Cordelia is like so traumatized in this episode.
And this is interesting, Tom, because we've never been told before. We know Cordy like faints or like falls over when she gets these visions, right? However, it now seems as though she is in pain from the moment the vision happens until it gets resolved. So until Angel and crew save the day, she is in pain. So she is like very much struggling this entire episode because it takes them a long time to figure out exactly what's going on. And that left me wondering, obviously Tom can't answer this, but like, I'm like, is Cordy going to leave the show? Like, it felt weird that she was like, they just kept bringing up like how much pain she's in, how difficult it is for her. Like, Angel orders every possible option for lunch because he is a terrible fucking friend and has no idea what kind of food she likes. He gets her like a roast beef sandwich, a turkey sandwich, a vegetarian option, like all this fucking food because he has no idea what she eats. What a fucking weirdo, Angel.
Anyway. Well,
we just complimented Willow and the Scoobies for getting Buffy every single snack possible.
But he literally says, I bought all of this because I forgot what your favorite meal is.
They said that too. We don't know what you want.
We don't know what you would want because you're grieving is different
That's kind of kind. I don't know. Like, I don't know what you like.
He's trying to be kind, but I think it's just I don't like him and I don't want to like him.
What did I want to say?
This might be evidence that Spike programmed the Jess bot to hate
him.
Angel's bloody stupid. So then when they go to the karaoke bar, they realize because of the karaoke host dude, he's like, you all have to work together because it turns out the guy who's stabbing his own eye is stabbing his own eye because it's someone else's eye because he also got the transplant. And it turns out that they're taking people that are on parole from jail.
Yeah.
And they're body snatching and they're keeping these people alive in like tanks. And the guy that was saying kill, kill, kill with the hand, it's because he wanted them to kill him because he was in like so much pain.
You know, I think that this makes a lot of sense because there was a time in my life where I was afraid of going to thrift stores and buying things from thrift stores because I was worried that the items that I would purchase would be haunted. So I think that this is a very valid and interesting thing. It makes sense is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. See, the key to Sarah enjoying Angel is her not actually watching Angel. But
yeah. Well, because like, she can stay awake during a 5-minute recap of it.
Okay. Guys, there's a reason why that I will reveal very soon why I can't stay awake. It's not 100% Angel.
I was going to say, it's some percent that it's Angel.
Some percent. But I can't keep awake for anything. So I'm so sleepy. I'm a sleepy girl.
So Lindsay, so they are like, you have to work together now. And meanwhile, Lindsay is like so disturbed by that, like, because he hasn't, because he does bad things all the time, but this is too far. They have taken it too far. So he,
well, it affected him.
Yes, exactly.
that once again, a tale as old as time. It doesn't affect, and I don't care about it unless it affects me. Now I certainly now care.
Now
about
I them. Care. Yeah. So he works with Angel to find the parole officer guy. That's how they figure out about the people being taken. And then he also, because him and that lady, Lila, you know, his like partner lady at the law firm, are both up for a promotion. She has secret files on everyone that she can expose them all. And he reveals this to the senior partners. Yeah. They're like, wow, congratulations, Lindsay. You got the promotion. And he's like, yeah, fuck your promotion. I quit. And he like smacks Lila on the ass on the way out and like blames it on his like evil hand.
There's a bit more. He does grab a gun and starts firing at his boss.
What? I forgot about that. He does do that.
Okay, hold up. Yeah. They're evil. You would think that the evil people would like Lila doing evil things like collecting
but not bad when it's against them. Not when it's right. against
Once
them.
Once again, we only care about morals and values.
Right. So if then
it doesn't affect you. Right.
Yeah, because then he's like, I quit, motherfuckers. And then they're like, well, congrats, Lila. You got a promotion.
Yeah.
And Lindsay is like, okay, I'm leaving LA. Time to hit the road. And like Angel's there to see him off.
With his evil hand.
Yeah, he still has the evil hand.
It's no longer evil though, I think, because they killed the guy.
They killed the guy it belonged to, so it's been unevilled, de-evilled, yeah. De-evilified.
Okay.
And that's it. Lindsay's off the show.
Well, he's gone. You want to talk about how he leaves what's on his car?
Oh yeah, on his way out, Angel puts like a cop suck bumper sticker on his car so that he'll like get pulled over, which I was like, hell yeah, ACAB bud, good job. Put that sticker on his car.
Yeah, Angel's being petty this entire episode because Lindsay sang really well in the karaoke bar.
Oh, that was so funny.
Because they were like, we need, how do we figure this out? I guess I need to sing. And everyone in the office was like, no, we don't want to hear Angel.
No.
He sucks so much at singing.
What does
and then he just trashing Lindsay singing, even though the rest of the crew was all like, oh, you have the voice of an angel, even though they know he's evil.
What did he sing?
I don't know, some song.
Like,
you know
kind
what
of
song?
Like a cunt, no.
It's not a country-ish, yeah.
Yeah.
But again, he just had a hand transplant. Let's not worry about the nerves. Perfectly fine to play a guitar.
Well, it was by an evil shaman. I don't think it was following normal medical rules.
This is not Dr. McDreamy doing surgery.
It wasn't. Okay, it wasn't like an actual doctor.
No, the doctor worked for the law office.
There was a doctor, but there was also an evil shaman in the surgery room.
Yeah, it was very funny though when he was like, "Surprise hand surgery today." It was like, "Okay, bro, damn, that's quick.
That's good.
Got to get in early." So that was what happened on Angel. Angel being petty against Lindsay was one of my favorite bits of the whole episode. I didn't like seeing Cordy not feel well. I guess Angel was nice and got her food, even though he literally could. I'm like, you should know my comfort food if we're besties. You know, like, you should know what I want.
I don't think that we would be getting rid of Cordelia, but is there a world
I hope not.
Cordelia would try to give up her powers?
I think that, yes. I think if Cordelia doesn't leave the show, which I don't think she will, because we haven't seen enough bad haircuts yet.
Well, also she's like literally the only woman on that show.
I know. I just think this is going to be a storyline of like Cordelia's in pain. Like something needs to change. Like we need to do something about this.
Mm-hmm.
Cause she got headaches, man. And they talk about how hedgehog guy didn't have to worry about this because he was like a hedgehog. So he was fine. So
that's what I wanted. I was about to ask. I forget his name. He was Irish.
Doyle.
Doyle did not have to deal with the headaches because
I think because he was not human, like it didn't affect his brain in the same way. And maybe he just had hedgehogginess that like helped.
He still had headaches, but it was easier for him because he was half demon. Stronger
because he was a man. Just kidding.
Well, I think demon, not
okay.
Not man.
Also,
not
Tom, man. I have to ask you a question. When you listen to like podcasts and stuff, I found out the other day that like targeted ads are like very strange. Because my husband was watching YouTube and he got a really crazy, insane ad that was like, you need to put on that jacket to go outside because you're a man. And it was like, I think it was an ad for like lined sweatshirts or something. Like it was like some kind of like heavier clothing for like winter. And I was like, what is this? I've never heard this ad before. Do you ever get those?
I haven't. I mostly get podcast ads for other podcasts.
Okay. I get a lot of Spanish ads too, which I think is kind of strange because I'm not anywhere near a border. But yeah. Anyway. That was it. That was you're a man. It's
just like, so wow. That's crazy.
I mean, for the record, he is not like he does not listen to like the Joe Rogan podcast or anything.
Maybe
like
he does.
I know he
it's
really does.
The number one podcast in the country.
Me with a spoon.
Because Will's listening to it in secret when Jess is in her head.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I don't think it's a bad thing to listen to enemy territory to understand what other people the others
bottom me to listen to that. Next week we are up to we're getting so close to the end of the season. Holy cow. Season 5, episode 19, Tough Love. Okay. I don't know. Tom's reaction gives me pause. Did you hear that?
No.
He did
And what did you read into that, Jess?
It's going to be something. It's going to be something big's going to happen. Something big's happening.
Okay.
Not like Joyce dying, like something else big. It's going to happen. Anyway, Angel is season 2, episode 19, Belonging. And
whoa.
Sarah, you do not need to watch.
Whoa.
That was so put on.
Whoa.
Nothing is happening in Angel and you can't convince me otherwise.
Holy
cow. Nothing ever happens in Angel.
Holy what's cow. Happening?
Belonging, woo!
That's an episode, baby. I would know if something big was happening because Sarah would have to watch it. This is not a Sarah has to watch episode.
Yeah, is there any more that Sarah is supposed to watch or
the finale?
Have we given up on Sarah watching anything?
Well, Sarah can. Sarah has to watch the finale. That's all.
Okay.
Yeah. Also, Sarah, we are eventually going to have to discuss what we're going to do because Angel runs for one season longer than Buffy does. And we're certainly not continuing the podcast as like an Angel only podcast. So
we're going to end our lives is what we're going to do.
There you go. It's been decided. We will die at the end of 2026. 1 year, folks. That's all you get. Okay. That's everything. That's the whole thing. Tom. Thank you, as always, for coming on. Not quite as unhinged as your recent appearance on One Indescribable Podcast. And for that, I'm quite thankful because poor Lindy is probably still recovering. I don't know that she'll ever recover.
It's her favorite show. She loved that episode. She was having fun the whole time.
I don't know.
She puts it on that
I'm a patron and I saw her face throughout the entire episode.
Okay, when you say that, you probably do need to explain that that's not an actual thing, that they don't,
no
actually, have, they don't actually have a Patreon, because otherwise people are going to be asking how do we get to be
no, there's no Patreon. I just have behind the scenes access and I was able to watch the video version of that recording, and poor Lindy. But go check that podcast out because it was honestly very entertaining and very funny. But I just did your plug for you, Tom. I'm so sorry. Do you want to plug anything else?
No, that was it. Thank you. Less work for me.
What about you, Sarah? Anything you want to tell the people to check out?
No.
Okay, great. Next week, we'll be back with some more Buffy and, of course, some more Angel. Until then, everyone, here endeth the lesson. Just ask. Shit 90 shows taught
me. This isn't just a game. It's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.